from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, growing threats from China, the Senate looks at protecting life, and the House takes steps to end it. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. Earlier this week, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with U.S. governors to warn them about attempts by China to infiltrate the country at the state level. He took the time to join Tony Perkins by phone to discuss his meeting, as well as the ongoing coronavirus outbreak in China.
Mr. Secretary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me on today.
Now, you sent a very clear warning to state leaders that they need to be on the lookout for efforts by the Chinese Communist Party to infiltrate various levels of government.
Tony, I spoke about a series of facts, things that we all know and that frankly aren't quite broadly enough on people's radar screen, including state and local officials, governors, school principals. These are entities, Chinese Communist Party entities, that have what would be seemingly innocent faces on them. The Thousand Talents Program, Confucius Institutes, and our institutions of higher learning. On their face, they look like just friendly outreaches from a country that wants a deeper set of relationships. But in fact, these entities are controlled and directed by the Chinese Communist Party. And what I was attempting to do was talk about how Chinese diplomats who are serving here in the United States are leading and executing on those programs in ways that present risk to American businesses, to Americans' privacy, and to America's foreign policy and national security. So it's not a partisan issue. There were 40-plus governors from all across the country, and I wanted them to be on heightened awareness about the risks associated with these various entities.
There's an effort at the government level where you see actually a number of Chinese businesses, sometimes fronts for the party, doing building projects, roads, such here in the United States. But you also pointed out in education that this is happening in classrooms K through 12 as well as college campuses. How's that happening?
So President Trump's been very clear. Chinese students coming here to get a good education, something we welcome. In the same, what we need is transparency and reciprocity. We need it wouldn't be the case that a Confucius Institute could be set up in a Chinese institution by an American entity controlled by the United States government, or in our K through 12 education programs, these friendship associations that are put there ostensibly to teach the Mandarin language, but in fact have deep connections back to the Chinese Communist Party. That's not right. We know the fact that they won't give us reciprocity is an indicator that these are not purely benevolent institutions, but rather are aimed at some other Chinese government objective. And I just we have Chinese citizens all across the world. I ran a small business in China. There are wonderful, great Chinese people. What I'm asking leaders to take note of is the risk that those with whom they deal may have an agenda that is different from the one that they present. And they may, in fact, be connected to the People's Liberation Army or the Chinese Communist Party itself.
And, Mr. Secretary, you've made very clear that we don't want to cut off relations with China. We want to maintain a relationship, but an equitable relationship. And I think an evidence of that desire to be a good neighbor to China is how we've responded to the coronavirus.
We are all across the United States government working diligently to support everyone who is at risk from the spread of the coronavirus. You've seen what we've done to protect Americans in terms of the State Department getting some 700 or 800 plus people out of Wuhan, out of the central location where this all began. We've watched America now come to help China, offering up to $100 million to assist them. We've provided medical supplies to them. We'll continue to provide that support. We're also, Secretary Azar, working diligently to provide American technical support, medical, epidemiological experts, so that we can help resist this, what is now a global threat. And America stands ready to continue to support the Chinese government in this. To your point, this is the place where we have a set of common interests and important objective, and America, at President Trump's direction, is prepared to do all we can to help keep not only Americans safe, but those all around the world.
But we can differentiate between our humanitarian efforts, where we want to help whatever nation might be in trouble and is willing to accept our help, and being naive and allowing a communist regime to infiltrate various levels of government. Or, you know, quite frankly, you know, I think we have to look at some of our, like the World Bank and some of the funds that we're sending to the low-interest loans that we're allowing China to have, that it oftentimes is being used for technology and other purposes that run counter to our focus on international human rights.
Yeah, Tony, you've got it exactly right. Look, this is a broad effort that President Trump has directed us to undertake, whether it's the risk of Chinese technology in our systems, which would give a key way for the Chinese Communist Party to have access to the most intimate information of American citizens. We've gone around the world telling other countries they need to be careful about that too, or to your point about how the Chinese are using financial power to leverage into political control and influence in countries around the world. We can see this now. This is bipartisan. America mm-hmm. didn't do enough for the last 10 or 15 years that under Republican and Democrat presidents alike. President Trump has made clear, we want fairness, we want transparency, we want a relationship with China that is balanced and equal, and on a commercial basis, we want those transactions to be things that make sense for the American people. Our first and foremost duty is to keep the American people safe and create economic prosperity at home. You can't have that when the Chinese Communist Party is stealing hundreds of billions of dollars of our most important technology and intellectual property.
Secretary Pompeo, I want to switch gears, another topic, in how this administration, and you've said this on this program before, that religious freedom is a top priority in terms of our foreign policy. It's also a top priority domestically, but in our foreign policy, it's been a top priority that you, at the direction of the president, have carried out. The president brought attention to a Iranian woman that had been missing, and now we have evidence of where she's at.
Tony, we're deeply concerned by reports that we've seen that the Iranian regime did, in fact, arrest Fatima Mohammadi. She goes by Mary. Mary has been targeted by the regime because she made the choice to convert to Christianity. The president spoke about this at the prayer breakfast. You and I both know this. The regime that leads the Islamic Republic of Iran doesn't respect religious freedom. And these kinds of arrests, they happen, sadly, far too often in Iran. And it's a brutal regime. And the American people should know that as long as it continues to deny its people the right to practice whatever faith they choose, the United States will be hard at and continue to call it out and do our level best to hold them accountable for this terrible repression of someone who simply wanted to exercise her own conscience and her desire to be a Christian.
And to that end, we're seeing other countries join in this effort of putting a focus, some maybe lip service initially, but I think they're coming along. There's an alliance that's been announced that the United States is leading on religious freedom, where, you know, I think those countries that refuse to recognize this fundamental human right are going to be kind of outliers, ostracized from the global community. And I think if there's anything that this administration would leave as a legacy, that certainly could be it.
We're working hard on it. President Trump has made it a real priority. So given me here at the State Department, the full authority to do this, you're exactly right. We've created, you know, we've done alliances on security before, and we've done alliances for business issues. We've put together the first coalition of countries based on a human right, the International Religious Freedom Alliance, a couple dozen countries to start. We hope to build it out, but it has a real mission. It's not about creating another entity for the sake of creating an entity. It has a real mission of identifying places where we can make real progress in securing that most fundamental of human rights, the ability for an individual to exercise his or her conscience, her own belief, her own faith, and live out her life in the way that her religious life in the way that she wants to. We're dedicated to it. We're focused on it. We think this alliance will, in conjunction with the annual gatherings that we hold here at the State Department, begin to make a priority issue for the world, not just for the United States, religious freedom.
Well, Mr. Secretary, I want to thank you for taking time out on a very busy schedule today and joining us. And as always, appreciate not only coming on the program, but appreciate all that you are doing at the State Department.
Thank you, Tony. Bless you. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
You can find out more about our efforts to defend faith, family, and freedom in Washington, D.C. and around the country when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'd also encourage you to support our ongoing efforts with a gift when you visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate link at the bottom of the page. That's TonyPerkins.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Tuesday morning, the Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing on the Born Alive Survivors Protection Act, at which FRC's own Petrina Mosley testified. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about it is a member of the Judiciary Committee, Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn.
Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to join you.
And I should say congratulations on your receiving the True Blue Award. You are a True Blue recipient. You were in the House, and now
yes,
that you're over in the Senate.
Thank you so much, and I have it sitting on my desk.
Well, we are thankful for your leadership, grateful for the stands that you take. And this was an important bill today. You've been an advocate for life, which is, quite frankly, it's refreshing to see Republican women in the Senate not just voting for life, and that was a step in the right direction, but you're an advocate. You're fighting for the unborn in the Senate.
Yes, I am. I think it's a very important thing to do. And during my time in the House, I spent so much time working on issues pertaining to life. And I have to tell you, it is so gratifying to me to see our culture move away from being pro-abortion and moving toward being pro-life. And this is one of those areas where science is really on our side and has helped prove the reason why. And, you know, I've got lots of friends who are now having that first grandchild, and there has been nothing that has helped the pro-life movement like science, and they're seeing those ultrasounds and those 3D ultrasounds, and you can see the baby's features, and, you know, babies have names as soon as you get the gender, and I think that this has really helped to change this, and specifically when we talk about late-term abortion, and we talked about that today in the hearing, and by the way, your witness was wonderful, and
well,
she did a
you.
Great job. We were so pleased to have her there. But, when you talk about babies that can live outside of the womb at 20 weeks,
right,
and the care that is given through neonatology and these NICUs, and having a physician and a nurse on the panel that worked in neonatology, it was so good to hear about that care. And then it is horrifying to hear about facilities that still perform late-term abortions. And if there is a baby born alive, then there is a discussion as to whether that baby is going to live or die. And that is something that you say, that's so barbaric. That would never happen. But that is what happens.
And that's one of the points that you and your colleagues have made on this issue, is that it's not really about abortion. It's about infanticide. This is about a baby that is born, that survives a botched abortion, the first attempt on their life. And it's about providing basic medical care. Under any other circumstance, we would be required. We would do that. But in this case, it's as if we turned a blind eye and not provide the basic health care to that child who was born.
That's right. And at that point, we should be saving that life. And these tiny little babies should be rushed to the hospital, and they should be given that care in those neonatology units, and given the special precautions, all of that being taken to save this life. And it is just unseemly, and we cannot, I find it so hard to imagine that anyone would be so cold-hearted as to say, oh, my baby survived, let's just go ahead and take this baby's life. And it is just sickening to me that that is something that could take place in our country.
Well, this is a defining moment for us as a nation. I mean, abortion is horrific as it is, and you're absolutely right. I think we're moving away from that. We see the culture shifting. But this takes us into a whole new arena where we're talking about infanticide. Now, as this bill has been proposed by you, Senator Sasse, and others, the opponents of this are saying, oh, it's not needed. It's not a problem. It doesn't happen. That's not true. And you've received testimony to that point.
Right. Absolutely. It does happen. And the nurse who was on the panel today talked about a phone call that she said is on YouTube where the abortion clinic would not admit the emergency personnel after the person had called for the emergency personnel and would not admit them. And this is one of the reasons, Tony, you continue to hear me and others talk about the imperative that every doctor who is going to perform abortion has to have admitting privileges at a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they do not, and something goes awry, it is the life of that mother and the life of that baby that is at stake.
Senator Blackburn, as you look at this bill and you hear the testimony, you see the need, what do you think the prospects are for this bill?
This is one of those bills that, yes, will get through the Senate, and then you're going to see it go to the House, and it is going to languish because you have people there that are not necessarily what I would call pro-choice, but they are pro-abortion. And they think that this is something that should be a mother's choice. But they don't stop and think about this. They are saying that they think a woman should decide if her child is going to live or die. So they're saying it's okay for a woman to decide if she wants to keep that baby or kill that baby. But they try to change the language and nuance this so that it doesn't sound quite that barbaric.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, again, I want to be very clear here. We're talking about a baby who was born alive. All right?
That's right.
There was an attempt at an abortion, but for whatever reason, it failed. The baby was born alive. Now, you know, there are those on the other side of, I mean, even you have Mayor Pete Buttigieg saying that, you know, it's the first breath. Well, clearly this baby is taking a first breath. It's breathing. It's alive. But at what point did they draw the line? If it's right after birth, is it 5 minutes after? Could it be 5 hours? Could it be, you know, I mean, if this line is in the sand and it's erasable, this is moving us down a very dangerous path. I mean, we have to understand and recognize the humanity of every child, born and unborn, and they need to be protected under our laws. And this is, to me, this is simply drawing a line between being a barbaric society and one that's civilized.
Correct. Absolutely. We don't go around picking and choosing on who we're going to kill and who gets to live. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, that's we don't want to live in a society like that. If you're that's elderly, right. You don't want to live in a society like that.
That's right.
Well, Senator Marsha Blackburn, I, again, thank you for your leadership on this and
sure.
So many other issues. I mean, you spearheaded the issue on the trafficking of baby body parts by Planned Parenthood in the House when you were in the House. And so you continue to champion the cause of the unborn and the sanctity of human life. And we thank you for that.
Well, and I will continue to do that. And I just appreciate so much the good work that you and your team does, and appreciate the way you support and recognize the work that we do and the votes that we take. So thank you so much.
All right. Again, congratulations on this year's True Blue Award.
Absolutely. Take care. Bye-bye now.
All right.
You can find out more about Senator Blackburn when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program with a one-time gift or by becoming a stand member. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com and click on the donate link at the bottom of the page. That's tonyperkins.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Wednesday, the House Energy and Commerce Health Subcommittee held a hearing on a bill that would codify Roe v. Wade. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about the hearing and the left's desire for abortion is Maryland Congressman Dr. Andy Harris.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, this is exactly what these presidential candidates are talking about. They're talking about taking, and I find this very interesting, quite frankly, because it's an admission that for 46 years we've been operating under the heavy thumb of the court, and now, knowing that the court might shift, they actually want laws to reflect what the court has imposed on the nation for the last 46 years.
Well, that's absolutely right. And you're right. I mean, it seems like every presidential candidate on the Democrat side feels exactly the same way. You know, even the moderates like Mayor Pete can't bring themselves to say that, you know, the partial birth, that a late term abortion or a, you know, child born alive act should, in the case of late term abortion, be outlawed, or the, you know, child born alive act should become law. You know, they're as radical as you can be.
Now, people need to know how far-reaching this bill would do. This would reach into the states. In the last 10 years, just for reference for folks, in the last 10 years, since 2010, we have seen a sweep of pro-life legislation across the states. In fact, about 500 pieces of pro-life legislation has been enacted into law. That's almost 40% of all pro-life laws that have gone into effect since 1973 have happened in the last 10 years. If this legislation were to go into effect, and it could, if the Democrats controlled everything, then all of those laws at the state level would be eliminated. This would allow for elective abortions for any reason up to the day of birth. It would reject even small protections like limitations on painful late-term abortions, informed consent laws, and safety standards for abortion clinics. This is radical stuff.
Absolutely, no question about it. You know, personally, I think it would be inventing a new constitutional right without the two-thirds majority necessary plus the ratification of the states. I think in the end, you know, the courts probably would turn it down, but that doesn't stop the radicals now. They're passing things. They're going to pass things that just try to promote their tremendously radical agenda on abortion. This is a perfect example. You know, you're absolutely right, Tony. We're seeing now how important the courts actually are, how important it is that President Trump is now appointed and had confirmed over 190 judges, including two Supreme Court judges. You know, the Democrats are very afraid now because they know that the court system is not going to be dependable in terms of upholding their radical abortion agenda going forward.
Now, Dr. Harris, we've talked about this on the program, that what led you into the political arena was the life issue. You were a doctor. You got involved in the pro-life movement. You saw what was happening. This led you into this path of now serving in Congress. We are so close with this last election to appointment of two constitutionalists to the courts. I mean, I think we're like on the 3-yard line, if I could use a sports analogy here, of actually seeing America becoming a predominantly pro-life nation again. But it all hinges, in my view, on this next election and what happens. All of this could be a race because we're now seeing, I've never seen a sharper contrast between the two parties on this issue than what we're seeing today.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, it will all come down to what happens in November, because I think pretty clearly the next president in the next president's term, whether it's President Trump or another president, there are likely to be two appointments at least. And if those two appointments are liberal judges, then we're going to revert to the old days of the courts inventing a right to abortion in the Constitution. If President Trump is reelected, I think we're going to have a 6-3 majority for quite a while of justices who are originalists. They are not going to write new rights into the Constitution. I think there's a good chance that they will turn over abortion law back to the states where it truly belongs.
Dr. Harris, one final question for you. This Abortion on Demand Act, do you think this is going to pass the House of Representatives?
Oh, I think if it gets to the floor, I think it will have the votes to pass. Thank goodness that, you know, Mitch McConnell in the Senate will never consider it. And, of course, the president would never sign the bill. But this is a radical House. This is driven by the extreme left wing of the Democrat Party. And on this case, with abortion, it will be abortion on demand up until birth. And some would suggest even perhaps after birth.
Wow. Wow. Congressman Andy Harris, thanks so much for taking time out to join us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.